Rosenblit, right?
That was good.
Yeah. Both PhD and JD, like my vice president. Excellent. So,
Got two for the price of one.
Two for the price of one. Use of innovative metadata search tool improves variable discovery in large P data sets, like the Simons Simplex collection. Without further ado.
Thank you for the introduction, and thanks everyone for being here. First, what the heck's a large P data set? Does anybody know? No. So when people talk about big data, they talk about two different and distinct things with two different kinds of problems. Often you talk about large N data sets with very, very large number of rows, right? So tens of thousands of people, hundreds of thousands of base pairs. A large P data set is a data set that may or may not have large numbers of rows, but it has a heck of a lot of columns, like thousands of tens of thousands. And the problems that you encounter handling one, the other, or the combination of both is somewhat different. Okay, so my presenter, my disclosures, which will also serve as my self-introduction, I work for Prometheus Research, and I'm also a co-owner. And Prometheus builds data management systems for interdisciplinary scientific projects. We help scientists make better use of their data with information technology. The objectives of this talk are first to describe the process of developing the Agile software tool that promotes variable discovery in these very large 1,000-column data sets. We'll assess the value of this technological approach and talk briefly about how researchers who work with large data sets can adopt it. First, some background. I'm going to use the Simons Simplex collection as the use case. The Simons Simplex Simons Foundation Autism Research Initiative, cutely named SAFARI, launched the Simons Simplex collection as an attempt to provide the largest data set to date that collects data from families affected by autism. The goal was very intensive in-depth phenotyping combined with collecting biospecimen genetic data and providing the capacity to collect ancillary data about each family. We collected over 2,600 families, each with at least one child affected by ASD, Autism Spectrum Disorder. This was a very large multi-site data collection. It was actually international. One of our sites was McGill. 13 sites over five or so years, four of them in active data collection. And in addition to this very large phenotype data set, we have a repository for genetic samples and other linked data, which I won't talk about in this presentation. Okay, so let's come back to our problem. The Simons Simplex collection contains many thousands of variables. The number is about 6,000 per family, larger if you count new versions of instruments that have come out in the course of data collection. What we've discovered when trying to create tools to disseminate this data, that new researchers coming in and starting to work with the data set had a serious challenge just identifying what's in there. How do I find the couple of things I may be interested in this enormous mass of data? It looks valuable, but I don't even know how to get started. So there are a couple of classic solutions, some of which we tried, others we didn't. One is to develop an ontology that organizes all of the variables available in this collection into some systematic whole. Now, there are two efforts to develop autism-specific ontologies, one from Amar Das group at Stanford, another by Alexa McCray over at Harvard. They've been at it for about 6 years. So we weren't going to hold our breath. We needed something this year. We needed something next quarter. Another really simple one is to provide a data dictionary. I mean, how hard is that? Well, it's not hard. We give them a data dictionary. But once you have a data dictionary in Excel or even some other form with tens of thousands of things in it, you haven't really solved the problem. You've solved it a tiny bit, but we still found researchers were really getting stumped. And part of the issue here is this is an interdisciplinary research project. So you have geneticists who know nothing about autism, certainly don't know enough about autism phenotype, going in and trying to do searches on variables they've never encountered before. And vice versa, you have phenotypers going in trying to look at genetic data. The last approach that we actually tried was kind of a variable browser approach. We created a tagging mechanism that allowed us to organize these variables into groups and build a tool that allowed researchers to come in and look at them systematically. Sounded good, but our usability testing showed that people were frustrated and weren't able to jump in and start on a task within 20 seconds like we want them to. Why? The easiest way to illustrate it is to talk about why Google beat Yahoo. Those of you who remember Yahoo, remember that it was not only a very good search engine for its time, but also tried to organize all of web content into some set of categories. Now that's great, that seems very useful, and it was very carefully curated by human editors. But what it requires you to do as a brand new searcher is to come in and all of a sudden learn this new conceptual organization scheme. That is not what you want to do when you first encounter a new large data set. It's very cognitively difficult, increases cognitive load, and it asks the user to do something before they get their first success experiment, which we know is extremely important in an encounter with a brand new system. Google won because it didn't ask you to learn anything. It just asked you to start typing and delivered results in a very rapid way that allowed you to interact with the system quickly. So we had the not-so-brilliant insight of saying, well, let's stop doing it like Yahoo is doing it and start doing it more like Google is doing it. And, this came out nice. This is the interface we wanted. Instead of having a large categorization browser, we wanted a box that said, what are you looking for? You type in what you're looking for, you search it, and you get some kind of list that actually gives you a reasonable facsimile of what you're looking for. So our first attempt was fairly traditional. All the data is already in a relational database. We then modeled the metadata as a separate schema in the same relational database. This is what you'd do if you were trying to develop, for example, a tagging model for your application. The new data model tried to be somewhat clever. We tried to support complex search features like synonyms, concept weights, and it was all working okay conceptually, but the performance was really sluggish. You had hundreds of thousands of rows in tag associated with various concepts, and it was kind of clunky. You had 20-second waits sometimes, and it's just unacceptable. People were not having a good experience with the system. Now, here's where I can tell sort of the brilliant insight story, but I have to give credit because the brilliant insight did not actually come from me. It came from me trying to explain what we're doing to Dennis Choi, who is the executive vice president of the Simons Foundation, for whom we're doing this work, who kept looking at me and saying, why is this so difficult? Why can't you just use Google? And I, would back up and say, okay, Dennis, Google searches through documents. We're not searching through documents. We are searching through variables in a relational database. We're actually looking through metadata. It's a very different problem, right? And he kept looking at me and going, I still don't understand. Why is this hard? So after a couple of conversations, you have a soul-searching moment. On the way back from New York on a train, I said, maybe there's another way to think about this problem that will make it a lot easier. Why don't we just pretend that each variable is a document? If we do that, if we flip the problem a little bit, we can now use standard document search techniques to find and rank variables. We know document search works. We know there are lots of tools that do it. So let's just take that leap of imagination. Turn out that wasn't a crazy idea. I talked to the developers, I talked to other folks on my team, some of whom are here, and they all said, that actually makes sense. So here's what the somewhat more detailed solution looked like. How do you pretend that each variable is a document? Pretty easy. You just build the document that describes the variable, right? In our case, we built a search report, which is a structured index that contains all the stuff you might want to look at. It had to be somewhat structured. It couldn't be a normal database index. I'll explain why later. Then we had to build an output report for each variable. What do you get back when you find it? Right. And we store both reports as attributes in a searchable database where each row is a variable. At this point, we can now switch to very standard solutions. We can use standard full-text search tools to find the search report. So you run the full-text search function, you rank the output, and you respond the corresponding stored output report attribute. And here's where I have to say why we had to use a structured index is because the weight, how you rank stuff really mattered depending on how you found it, or what is it that brought it to your attention, where it was metadata, the data in the database, or a manual tag. Okay, so this is what we asked for, and this is what we got. You can now type in Verbal IQ, hit search, and get back results. And this unlovely screen is HTML. No user would actually use this. In reality, this is a component that delivers either CSV, XML, or JSON to another component that you use in your web application. But we also had a basic HTML up, just so we could look at it while debugging. And this is the kind of information you get in a search report. Here, this is a WASI Verbal IQ. Pretty reasonable that this column would come up as number one. It's one of the many IQ measures in this data set. You also get some metadata information like the range values of 65 to 140. You get some manual tags in there, and you have some statistical information as well. As for this variable, because it's an important one, we have a description, and that's also searchable. Okay, so interesting challenges on this problem. Ranking. The search universe isn't that large. It's tens of thousands, potentially growing to many tens of thousands. But you still can get hundreds of columns when you type in something like IQ or cognitive. You need a clever search algorithm, and we tweaked it to make it more or less intuitive for our users. Some of it was obvious. We made, for example, manual tags are weighted much more heavily than automated tags. Metadata column names are weighted much more heavily than values that are found inside the column, inside the variable. And we had to develop a parser that recognized variants of Boolean operators and removed stop words. Our approach was agile software development. We iterated over a two-week cycle for 3 months and incorporated feedback from test users in every case. And our enabling technologies were pretty standard except for the last one. We basically used SQLite, a very lightweight relational database built into lots of programming languages already, so no install burden. And the built-in SQLite full-text search, it already came with the database, so we didn't have to do anything. The last one is the only unusual one. I'll take one slide to tell you guys about it. It's called HTSQL, for Hypertext Structured Query Language. HTSQL is a very interesting approach to building relational database. It does a number of things for you. It's a relational database web gateway. So if you type in this URL in your browser bar, which is demo.htsql.org/school, you hit a database of information about schools, like a college course catalog. And this would actually run a query against the database saying select from school all. Right? So you just submitted a query to the database. It's actually a very advanced query language where the URI is the query. Now I'm betting most of you in this audience have not used HTSQL before. But if you look carefully at the syntax of those two URLs below, you can figure out what they're about. The first one looks for courses with more than 3 credits, where the school department.school, well, that's a join right there, is engineering. And the second one returns a very nice count. If you look at the SQL for both these, it's actually very hairy. But the HTSQL is very terse. So I'm going to say some jargon here. I won't explain it, but for those of you who know what it means, it's a RESTful API for relational databases. Very cool. But for the rest of us, it's a way to build maintainable web applications quickly and cheaply. It's also a communication tool for developers, analysts, and end users. Okay, so what did the overall effort look like? The pink components, or I guess they're maroon now, are the stuff that we actually had to build for this project. The rest of it already existed. So your database is the blue box over there, the HTSQL processor already built a metadata catalog. We just pump some of that data into a SQLite index, and we also index the values in addition to the metadata. And then we use the parser utility. We pull data from a web form and custom rank function, and return back a bunch of ranked results. The data flow view of it looks like this, the 3 processes. First, you build the HTSQL metadata catalog. Second, you build the SQLite index. And third, you build the SQLite column report. And when you execute the search, when you're done preparing, you first parse the search string, build the query, and then rank and return the results. And what you get in the end is this. If I type in ASD symptoms here, I get back this result. Now, interestingly, ASD, standing for Autism Spectrum Disorder, doesn't appear anywhere in the name of the column, but here it appears as a manual tag that somebody submitted, okay, which is ASD symptoms and language. And ultimately, you can take this kind of output and make it a component of a much nicer looking web application that looks something like this. This is a tool we developed for the Simon Simplex collection called the dataset builder that allows you to pull variables and combine them. And the only place you see the full text search is that little component that says enter search term. That's the only way it shows up. Okay, so lightweight, easy to implement approach, super fast, accessible via the web. Really improves usability. We have very good reviews from the users. Promotes data use and reduces your support costs, right? So people, geneticists can now go in and find phenotype data they're interested in without having to call us up and asking, hey, what's in your system? Good potential for beta data integration and can be used on top of any of your relational databases. So easy component. And obvious implications for public health practices, optimizes data retrieval, promotes interdisciplinary data usage by helping people who don't speak the same language find data that they're interested in, aids in analysis, and currently is in use in Safari Base, which now supports 120 research projects, and we've already distributed 130,000 biospecimens who are studying autism spectrum disorder. And I would like to just acknowledge everyone, all of my co-authors who have contributed to this paper and did all the real heavy lifting. So thank you. Before I run off the stage, let me pause here and see if there are any questions. Less than what you have. I mean, if you can write, the database queries that you're writing are about as complex. So basically, you can use all the skills that you've developed to write Medline, you know, PubMed queries and Medline queries. It's the same concept. If you can write an Excel function or do a database query, you can do an HTSQL query. So it's actually designed for folks like you who are analysts and have a lot of experiences with the querying process, but don't want to program. Yeah, great question. I see sort of an incoherent question over there. Good. Yeah.
Can it be used for medical records?
That's an excellent question. It depends on what kind of EMR system you have. I mean, if you have Epic, like a MUMPS-based system, probably not, because data is not stored in a relational database. So what it requires is that underneath the data is in a relational database. Usually people implementing like Epic systems have a business intelligence unit that sucks all of the interesting data and puts it in a relational database, and then you can plot this tool on top of it. So excellent question, but yeah, one of the underlying technology requirements is there's a relational database underneath.
But it can be
done. Yeah, if you pull data in a relational database, if you do that work, yeah, absolutely. It's very, you know, that's the only requirement, but it is a requirement. Okay. Thank you, everybody.
I like when attorneys give presentations too, because some disclosure, I'm sure you didn't, because of the new intellectual property laws that our House and Senate signed September 16th this year. So if you don't know it, please check it out. New patent laws, first to invent laws now, not first to first to file, not first to invent. You probably know that though. Also, on databases, there's ontological databases and then there's the object databases that go over top of that. So, of course, like the presentation underlining the HyperSQL and the relational database tables, you can have an object-oriented database that can actually abstract that type of structure from your relational model, right? So I'm sure you're working over that too. So great presentation.